Look, I grew up in Bakersfield. I am a local milk person, and I am offended.
Left and right.
What is right?
That's not right.
Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, he's right.
I could be wrong.
The vaccine could be fatal.
Kind of like an abortion.
Abortion is murder.
Healthcare provider.
Church.
State. Global warming.
Gun control.
Immigration.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Always forward. For a better America. For an endless, enduring dream and 1,000 points of light.
For the last 9 days, the entire world has seen for itself the state of our union, and it is strong.
You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab him by the pussy.
Oh, that's not right.
Hello and welcome to Are We Right? Hello, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing good, Chris. Doing well.
Doing very well.
It's been a few weeks.
It's been a few weeks. I heard you were in Dublin briefly.
I was in Dublin for a little bit, celebrating my birthday.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a good one. Really good experience. Tell you something, Chris. The opinions of the United States are
they think we're very strong, right? They think we're strong again.
So
we've been
I'll tell
made
you what,
great.
I spent a semester in London. And they had a lot of respect for the United States. And yeah. I actually took an American English class, like American lit class,
right,
from the British because I want to see like what this was like.
Sure.
And day one, they start off with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the respect with which these people talk about our documents that we just learned about and I don't think we really appreciate. Like, they really appreciated them. And this was a different experience.
Really? This time it wasn't the same?
It was not the same. Opinions have changed. Our position on the world stage has weakened. And you can say that it hasn't, but I've seen pre-Trump and post-Trump what Europeans' opinions of the United States are, and it's different now. But happy news, I came back and went to Politicon and realized that we're in an intellectual civil war. So
so it's basically a good news, bad news situation.
It's,
yeah?
it's bad news, bad news.
Oh, bad news, bad news. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, so that's kind of why we've been gone for a few weeks, folks. Mm-hmm. We just had a lot of stuff going on, yeah. But
We're ready to go.
A lot has happened. We started like going through all the stuff that has happened, and it was just going to take too much time to get it all in chronological
order. Let's just take a few
order.
Seconds to say a couple words that wouldn't have made any sense about 3 weeks ago, okay? I'm going to start. Mooch.
Skinny repeal.
Milk people.
Is this like one of those improv games where we go back and forth until...
Yes, and. Yes.
Twitter policy.
I think that's it. I think I'm burnt on that one.
I can't think of anything else really major.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of big ones, but you know.
The the transcripts of the phone call, that was a pretty big one. But anyway, lots of stuff.
A lot has happened, my friend. Do you want to transition into our favorite segment?
Oh my gosh, I love this segment so much.
Trump tweets.
It's a modern form of communication. It's where it's at.
All right, I'm going to start off this time, I think, unless you've give you some time to make sure you pick the right one. I was going through Donald Trump's timeline, and it's changed a lot. There's a lot more retweets than there used to be.
Yeah, he's tweeting people, or
he's really,
retweeting people.
He's bringing up the little-known Fox News. He's, you know, these other accounts like Trump Forever 45, like, he's really getting the small man's voice out there. So my first tweet here is from July 31st. If Obamacare is hurting people, and it is, why shouldn't it hurt the insurance companies? And why should Congress not be paying what public pays? So see, this one is there's a long journey here. At the beginning, I have a lot of problems, very many problems. Literally, as Dan said earlier, it's 140 characters. You got to be succinct. You got to be to the point. You got to get your point out.
It's the whole purpose of the medium.
The whole idea is Twitter is short form content. if Obamacare is hurting people, okay, you've set up a proposition. Maybe, maybe got not. It. And it is. So he could have just said, it is hurting people.
Obamacare is hurting people.
Right.
That's, I just cut through several characters.
Exactly. You could have saved so much room. So that's a problem. But then he comes back around, and as Emily was saying earlier, he went from crazy back somehow and went extra crazy and came out the other side and was perfectly logical and said, why should Congress not be paying what public pays? And I'm like, yeah, that's a really good point.
No, that's a good point.
Donald Trump.
I don't know how the premises got you there.
Yeah, because if Obamacare is hurting people and I want to replace it and repeal it, but also Congress should be paying, which has never been in any of the versions of the healthcare
no.
bill. So
get that in the bill.
That's right. What public pays?
What public pays?
For a long public? Time. Long time.
Long time.
So that's my main one. I've got, I would do that hashtag one too, but if you have yours ready.
If you want to do the hashtag one, you can.
I'm just so, like, literally, again, the things that piss me off about him much more than any of his, I mean, he is an evil person, like, that's a whole different thing.
Sure.
But, like, the main thing is his Trump Twitter etiquette. Because, as we talked about before, he uses dot, dot, dot when there's a threading feature specifically designed for multiple posts. And then, like, just recently, he posted hashtag fake space news. And the whole idea of a hashtag, it is one long string of characters, not including a space.
Spaces don't work.
Spaces
in
don't work. And clearly he didn't even notice that it didn't, like, highlight.
He just did hashtag fake and then said the word news.
Yeah, so now if I'm looking for my favorite hashtag fake tweets, I'm going to see this. And how can I find out about the fake news? These are the problems I have when I'm filtering out my fake tweets.
So, I'm getting this queued up here.
Mm.
Fake
tweets, fake news.
So, one of the things that he retweeted today, this is my Trump tweet.
Oh, you're going for a legitimate one.
There's so many really good ones.
Yeah, I know.
If you guys follow me at Dan Bar Linmar, I am constantly tweeting at the president. I told him to fire Bob Mueller.
Worm tongue. Yeah. Secretly, Dan has been putting thoughts in his head this whole time.
I also will just retweet things that he tweets that I find absolutely
abhorrent.
Atrocious.
Uh-huh.
And give my little comment on it. Do you want to give your Twitter handle while we're at it?
Sure. I mean, this has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about, but at I am Chris Truman. I've got about 3,000 followers, not to brag, but I don't tweet anything about politics at all.
I think I've got like 20. Anyway, so he retweets Fox and Friends this morning.
Oh, it's my favorite show.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is on. And she's talking, and this is what she had to say. This was retweeted by the President of the United States.
2008, Donald Trump wasn't running for president. This isn't something that I'm sure everything enters Donald's mind. He never stops thinking. But at the same time, this is an agenda. And my concern is, if they end up with an indictment against a family member just to get at Donald Trump when they couldn't get at him, there's going to be a real uproar, a real uprising in this country. You saw those
Who
people
says they can't
last...
get at him?
I'm sure... Look, you can do anything. Look, I was a prosecutor for 32 years. You can indict a ham sandwich.
All right. I think we've heard enough.
Yeah, I think I got the gist of it. So, we're going to indict the ham sandwich, right?
So, yeah, the ham sandwich. She goes off on how you can basically indict anyone for anything. But
sure.
The point that she makes there is that if they indict a member of the Trump family...
Eric, Donald, Jr., anybody. Ivanka.
Kushner, right.
Good old Kush.
If they indict a member of the Trump family, there will be an uprising in this country. She is completely dismissing the fact that they could have actually done something wrong.
Right.
It's just if they indict a member of the Trump
family... If we convict
them
of a crime, no
matter...
Of
a crime,
right.
Yeah. Even not even convict. Indict them.
Indict them, correct, yeah.
There will be an uprising in this country. And to me, it's... I've been watching Fox slowly start laying the groundwork essentially for civil war. Saying these dangerous things of like... basically like this, where it's if the president did these things. Is that so wrong?
Right.
And then going into this now, where it's like, if they indict them for these things, like, there should be an uprising. And you're going to have people who sit at home listening to these things mm-hmm. going, damn straight, there should be an uprising.
Right.
Like, is that so bad if the president did these things? Completely ignoring the actual legality of what we're talking about.
Right. It's questioning the base premise that we should all be peaceful in our protests, that we should be loving of the other people in our country, that it's okay to be violent,
and,
even if it's subtle, even if it's not direct. They're saying it's allowed.
Understanding that if the president commits, I don't know, high crimes and misdemeanors, Dan quotes the Constitution, that you can indict them for it, and
mm-hmm.
that there should be there is rule of law.
We have to hold the president accountable, and this
and
is,
his affiliates
right.
and his family
his
members,
whole family,
and no one is above the
his
law.
Cabinet, yep.
And they're establishing that these people are above the law, so that way if we indict them,
we're justified.
We're laying the ground for civil war.
Right. And on that topic, we are dealing today with gun control. There's many statements that the president has made, whether it's about police brutality, whether it's about these comments from people in the conservative world saying that kind of legitimizing violence against people you disagree with or against liberals or against the fake media, this idea that you can use violence to revolt in certain different ways. So we're going to jump into a video here. This is a something that made the rounds, but I watched it today again just to kind of get myself in that same zone of being... the importance of this issue. And so the NRA put out a video recently that got shared around because people almost thought it was a parody. They thought it was so blatantly basically asking their members to be violent against people that disagree with them. It seemed like it couldn't be true. So this video we're going to play now is from the NRA, basically a propaganda film from the NRA.
This is Dana Lash speaking for the NRA.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
No, 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 no.
Oh my gosh, mind blowing. I wanted to just jump straight into our topics after that, but there's a few things I wanted to pull out of that. One, the use of the preposition there, or pronoun.
Yeah.
That they continue to set as there versus us, you versus them. So a very divisive statement to begin with. Secondarily, the one that hit me again while listening to that was the police will have to eventually do their jobs. Basically saying that if people protest enough, if there's enough social justice warriors in the street, the police have to do their jobs. And what they're insinuating there is they should fire into a crowd. Like, what are they saying there?
Yeah.
They're saying that the police will have to arrest and detain and stop protests, stop free speech.
Let's talk about the marches that have been happening that they've gotten their people to do.
Right.
There's been the Women's March,
mm-hmm.
which is a march for women to be taken seriously in this
mm-hmm.
country. The day after a man was elected who said it's okay to grab him by the pussy if you're a celebrity.
Right.
A science march.
Right. Just straight
just
up for facts and
for
figures.
Facts and truth and, you know, protecting the environment, protecting people,
mm-hmm.
Vaccines,
mm-hmm.
which will be an episode that we'll talk about.
In the future, yeah.
So those two marches. What other marches have there been that have been...
Well, I'd say that they're clicking in Black Lives Matter, some of the
okay.
other hatred of other types of movements that have been very vocal and been in the streets.
And so you need to fight back against these
right.
ideas?
Yeah, it's fighting against the fact that they are out there somehow as a threat to you.
With the clenched fist of truth, I'm speaking on behalf of the NRA. Like, right. What else could that...
Right, this is something you might hear on, like, an InfoWars or something else, but it's coming from the NRA, people that are about gun... It should be about gun safety and gun ownership. Should be about a wise and effective use of weapons. And sure. they're coming across as the media and the other is going to take your guns, is going to, you're going to have to stand up and act. And so to your point earlier, it's justifying a revolution. It's justifying this kind of violence against basically people who disagree with you.
And I've grown up, I grew up in Bakersfield, very conservative.
Right.
We didn't have guns in our house my whole life, but when we got them, like, we became members of the NRA. Mm. And it was always... We want safe, responsible gun ownership. Sure. Like,
that's
like,
been the conservative line for years, decades.
It's we're not going out to shoot people. Like, some of this is for recreation or hunting. And, you know, my family has only ever used our guns to go to the shooting range because that's fun. It's recreation. This is a departure from what I've grown up knowing.
Right. So let's think about this. The conservative line, like Dan was just saying, has been typically that there's two reasons for having weapons in your house. One is the more core base value of what the Constitution says. The Second Amendment, the idea that there is a constitutional right to have a militia, to have people that can stand up and that can also revolt in a certain way against their government.
A well-regulated militia. We'll come back to that point.
Right. And the second one I'd say that we've often heard is the idea of self-defense. Is, you know, the gun's the best defense against a robber. You got to have your gun in your house to protect you or whatever else. And so my experience, somewhat similarly, my dad was very conservative, and we had guns in the house when I was younger. And then as he had children, took the guns out of the house because he realized, like, realistically, there's more risk to my children than there is risk of me ever using this gun in a way that would protect myself. But then the Rodney King riots happened, and there was people going door to door, taking advantage of this riot situation and literally stealing things from people's houses. And he's like, yeah, it would have really been nice. I would have felt a lot safer if I had a gun loaded on top of the fridge or whatever, so I could grab this. And there is that element of that idea where I think a lot of conservatives used to hold of just this idea of, like, hey, it's just in case. It's just in case. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Civil unrest, whatever. And so those are the more easily argued against positions of, like, I can see how, whether it's your own fear or maybe you live in a certain area that is very dangerous,
right,
there's a way to argue that point of saying, like, yeah, like, I have a pistol so that you steal from that guy instead of me because, like, I'm trying to protect my family and my world.
If you live in Los Angeles when the entire city is exploding in riots, you it's a good idea for you to be able to have something that can defend your family because the police are busy doing everything all at the same time. And also, you don't know when such a riot is going to erupt.
Right, you can't expect that, so you don't... And that's where people's argument come from of the, like, oh, the mental health checks are slowing us down. It's like, well, no, you should have this gun, you know, well-trained. As an adult, you can have this in your house.
It's probably not going to erupt in suburban Bakersfield, but then you wouldn't think that it would... You know, Ferguson was a suburb of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think, and that turned into a riot situation as well. I have family who worked for government offices, and they were told, don't come in, because if this verdict comes down the wrong way, they're going to storm on government buildings, so don't come in. So there are situations where if a riot situation breaks out, you need to defend yourself.
Definitely. So let me jump back here. I'm going to pull this source from a source my mom told me would be good, and so I hope she's proud. This is from the Heritage Organization. It's the Heritage Guide to the Constitution. The Militia Clause. Quote, the Congress shall have power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15. So, Dan, is there anything else that I'm missing there? I know we talked about the well-regulated militia is an important part of that.
Right, and we'll talk about that when we start talking about regulation.
The actual, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's these examples of, like, as it now stands, the Congress will have the power, if they please, to march the whole militia of Maryland to the remotest part of the Union and keep them in service as long as they think proper without being in any respect dependent upon the government of Maryland for this unlimited exercise of power over its citizens. This is a section from 1788.
So is that there? We have to ask the honest question of people who own guns for recreation, are they in a local militia?
I would argue no.
I don't know anyone who's in a local militia.
Yeah, me neither. This seems, and but to a point, like, this is something where the Constitution has not aged as well as it could have. Of, like, this was very, 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 very important when you were dealing with the Revolutionary War,
and they were talking about muskets,
right? And you were talking about muskets. You were talking about a completely different type of weapon, and you were talking about this idea of literally needing to go defend your country. Like, the British could show up on your shore, and you're like, oh no, and we can't get there in time.
In that case. If you're in the late 1700s and are
let me know. Callers, if you could just dial in.
And you're used to the British invading, then you can have you can own guns.
Hit us back with your tweets if you've been recently invaded by the British. But yeah, so it's a very different time. But there's... So I'd say that the modern definition of that is this idea of... that there's a lot of people, I think, that believe that America is a more defended nation because... no one would invade us on foot because they'd have to take on, you know, the hundreds of millions of weapons that are throughout our country.
That's why we've never, our shores have never been invaded, save for, like, terrorist attacks.
Sure.
They've never been, we've never
a
had
a ground invasion would never happen.
Right. And Lincoln says something to that effect of, like, there will never be an invading army that will drink from the Ohio River. It's just not because of, this is why. Mm-hmm.
And so let's switch to the idea of revolting against the government.
Right.
There's this idea that was held for a long time of this idea of my ability to have a weapon kind of keeps the government in check because they can never come in with the military and take over.
It's the fourth check and balance of the United States government.
Right. And so there's this challenge where my perception has changed in the idea of, like, look at the drone program. Me having a pistol in my house is not going to stop the drone attacks. So there's not a real argument to say that, like, oh, our guns could completely stop. Now, if the government used the military might against its own people, they would win. Because they have the best trained people, the best everything else. Now, I would imagine in that case it would be more of a civil war situation where there'd be people defecting from the military, everything else. But there's no realistic way I can say that, like, I'm going to hold a pistol up to every soldier that tries to walk into my house. Like, no, they're going to be better trained. They're going to have these weapons that we don't have. And so that's where we get into this argument.
It's almost like we've convinced ourselves that having these guns against these guys, it's we've lulled ourselves into a false sense of security where it's we can defend ourselves, but in an actual situation, there's no way.
Right. There's not the same access to weapons.
And if you've got a president who would open up nuclear silos on his people...
Right.
Which I'm not implying that we do have such a president.
Of course not. No, he's a very...
Time will tell.
That's right. But yeah, so there's this challenge of that's not really a legitimate argument anymore. And so we're dealing with a situation where now the guns are there sort of in a way of protecting us from potential ground invasion, maybe, is a legitimate argument. Not really from our own government, except in the idea of, like... I'd say probably in a lot of the minority communities, there's an idea of guns protecting you from, obviously, other gangs or other people that could have come attacked you, and also maybe from the police in certain situations, like, not very effectively, but, like, there probably is that thought. But when we get into the arguments of AK-47s, assault rifles, high-caliber weapons, there's no world in which you need that. But criminals will always have access to that in different ways. And so a lot of the talk lately has been around those kind of checks and balances on what kind of weapons can we get, what kind of regulations can we have, and also going into the mental health checks and everything else.
Yeah. So the only point that I have on assault rifles is assault rifles are already illegal. What a lot of people sometimes refer to as assault rifles, the AR-15, they'll say, well, what does the AR stand for? And that stands for Armalite 15. The AR is the maker of it's the Armalite makes the AR-15. It's a really just a brand name, a serial number. And the difference between an AR-15 and an actual hunting rifle is purely cosmetic. It's the same mechanism. It's a semi-automatic rifle. It just looks scarier. Mm-hmm. And so now we can argue about, well, do people need high capacity clips? And we can talk about that. Sure. If you need a high capacity clip, are you that great of a hunter? If you're using an AR-15 for hunting, some guys just want something that looks cool, and you know, you can't really legislate that.
Right.
But that's my only piece is that assault rifles are already illegal.
Yeah.
Unless you're like a member of the military. Mm-hmm. So when people are talking about AR-15s, we need to outlaw those. Okay, but you're talking about outlawing something that functions the same way as typical hunting rifles.
Exactly.
So
there's two places I'd like to push back on in general. If I'd like to first, let's push back, as we usually do, we push back against the conservative ideas that are becoming more popular, and then I'd like to push back again against the left to a certain degree of the more liberal ideas that have happened recently in regards to gun control. So I'll start with the right. I think the two things that for me seem just like they should be obvious. A lot of things have been done on this of like, if you've seen the special Jordan Klepper Solves Guns, I really enjoy a lot of the different things he went through on there. But effectively, I think things that it should not be a partisan issue is mental health and background checks.
Absolutely.
If you're a felon, if you have gun violence in your past, and if you have mental health issues, you should be banned, and you should be, it should be a very difficult process for you to get a weapon. There shouldn't be no gun show loophole. There should be no place in which you can buy guns without that check.
Which, just as an aside, I think gun show loophole is one of the best band names could ever find.
I was telling earlier that this is going to be one of my Trump tweets, but Dems Scream Death about the healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
That was going to be my other band name. But
Dems Scream Death Dems Scream Death is the... is the freshman album by the Gun Show Loophole.
Right, yeah, by the Gun Show Loophole. Yeah, I think they're opening for Politicon next year, so it's really great for them. so those are the two ones that I feel like obvious. I don't know enough, honestly, to argue anything else beyond that, but I think those are some pretty obvious things that we could do to improve in the next few years.
We need an absolute real conversation in this country about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right about the felons. I think that one is
sure.
Speaks for itself. I'm not even going to touch that. But mental health, we need to make mental, like, it all comes back to healthcare. We need to make it easier for diagnosis. We need to remove the stigma of mental health. Mm-hmm. We need to have better access to people, low income families, because I don't know the statistics on this, but. Sure. I would gather that a number of these mass shootings are carried out by people who maybe cannot afford mental health treatment.
Yeah, what do you hear every time? It's a lone wolf. It's the guy that's had past of either seeing therapists or has gotten in trouble in different ways.
And so we know these people have these mental issues,
sure.
But we just kind of hum and haw and don't really... give them, make sure that they are able to have access to the treatment that they need.
Right.
And also, apparently, are not looking into how close they are to weapons. Like, are they in a home with weapons? Like, we obviously can't take away the weapons from the homeowner. Maybe we should talk about institutionalizing this guy and maybe take away some of the stigma of that. Making sure the gun, I made a joke about the gun show loophole. It is a great band name, but we should get rid of that. Like it says well-regulated militia, and yet you shall not infringe upon their right to bear arms.
Right.
It also says well-regulated. There needs to be good regulation.
Right, because when you don't do that, then you get these kids that give all gun owners a bad name. This idea of...
Right.
I was 18. I went to the gun show and I bought the coolest gun I could because I was unconfident about myself and I wanted to impress a girl or impress my dad or whatever. Like, that's not the kind of guy that should be owning these weapons. Someone should be who is trained, who's either has been in the military or police service or these other things, like people that obviously know what they're doing.
Right.
And that's great for them to have those weapons. Those are the guys that could potentially use those well.
I think we also need, you know, when you buy a car, you need to pass a basic safety course. You need to be able to drive the car. Like, you need to pass the test, right? Mm-hmm. I think that in order to own a gun, you have to get a license, right? You have to have a gun license, but there's no... The training for it is very basic.
Right.
We need to make sure that gun owners are learning proper gun safety, because there's a lot of accidents in the home that result from that don't need to happen, because if you just knew how to take care of, like getting a safe if you have children, and making sure that the ammo and the gun are in two separate locations. Like, these are...
There wouldn't be these stories every week of, yeah, kid
like,
grabs
if
a gun.
You were, if you were, like, I mean, in accidents do happen.
Right. But it would be the oddity instead of the common case.
Right, and it's that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say regulation, and good regulation is making sure... If you want to own a gun, the Constitution allows you to own a gun. But there's a responsibility, and the Constitution says it needs to be well regulated.
Exactly.
So I think there's ways that we can have both.
Yeah.
So, and that's pushing against the right.
Right. That's our position of, as conservatives, that's the thing we would argue for, hoping to see progress and change as the global conservative idea, that we can have guns without having to be like, anybody gets a gun whenever they want and everything. Like, you got to have that element of responsibility and individual responsibility.
Absolutely.
And the government can stop criminals and can stop other people when it deems necessary for the safety of the union. It can stop you from having a gun, and that's okay.
I would say that's well regulated.
Exactly.
So, and we're called progressive for having these views.
Right, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be progressive. This should be the conservative hardline. This should be the typical conservative view. So that's our pushback against the right. On the left, let me start out by saying every single mass shooting is a terrible, horrible occasion. Aurora, these school shootings, it brings the country to tears. Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, like, these experiences that make us so fearful, because it's so random, it feels like. It often feels like, okay, someone that we couldn't have seen coming just ran into this public place and killed people. And so it instills this kind of fear that the government can't protect us, that we don't know when this is going to happen to us. And so then we usually overcorrect at that point, where it's this terrible fear, the same way with terrorism or other things, where it seems so scary at the time. And so we often jump to these conclusions of going, like, we need to get rid of all guns. We need to have completely safe spaces. We need to figure this out. And so there's often been messages from the liberals of, like, get rid of all guns, or like, let's do Australia, let's buy back all the guns, or whatever else. And like, I was having a good discussion with my dad about this, that he basically said, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm pretty lefty now about guns. Like, I do not feel like most people have enough responsibility to own guns. I feel like that's not an individual right. But what do we do, right? Like, if right now, if someone was like, all right, you know, we've got President whoever in office, and he says, okay, like, let's get rid of all the guns, let's stop gun violence. What do you do? Because, like, 90% of the guns are in these low-income areas, often minority areas. They'd have to go in, what, with our police force and go steal everybody's guns, go march into people's houses and take their means of defense away, or buy these guns back? Like, there's no way to solve that problem.
Some of them are antiques. Some of them were my great-grandfather's rifle that has been in our generation. Like... Some people collect guns.
Right. And so we can't have this argument where it's like, no one is allowed to have a weapon. Nobody can have anything more powerful than like a little small pistol or anything else. Like, we have to be able to bend on that. There has to be an element of saying, there's a reality. Just like with the immigration argument, we have to say, like, on the right, we had to say, like, okay, these people are already here. These kids are here, and they've grown up as Americans. We have to deal with them. Guns are here. Guns have been here for so long, longer than a lot of, you know, immigrants or anything else.
There's like 300 million guns owned in the United States.
Right, so we can't be talking about taking people's guns. We can't be talking about buyback programs, because they most often have proved not to work. We can look at examples of Australia and European countries where they have found these ways to find a better balance and been able to reduce violence, but they still have their own problems with terrorism and bombs. And everything else. Like, it doesn't solve violence.
And... That might work for a country like Australia, but it's different. Like, we are in a different situation than they are in.
And I love this point. We had our friend Slater started writing a few notes here. He wrote, for the most part, Canadians have similar gun laws to ours, and I don't have the sources here to back it up, but I'd imagine it's fairly similar.
I trust Slater.
Yeah, he's a solid guy. But the general idea is that there's less violence there, and we could maybe say that could be because of gun culture and some of the stuff that's happened by the NRA and on the right, of this idea that you're allowed to have a gun for hunting, for anything you want. It's just, it's part of your kind of like becoming a man is owning a gun. Like that's a culture that indicates violence, that basically allows violence to happen.
I think it's that, and also consider, to sound like a broken record, how does Canada approach mental illness?
Right.
How is their healthcare system? Mm-hmm. Because they're taking care of people. They're taking care of these disturbed individuals and making sure that they don't have access to guns. And so, for me, it's an issue of mental health and knowing gun safety.
Right.
And if you address both those things in a serious way and have real reform and regulation on those issues, I think you would see gun violence go down.
Definitely. And I think, again, to push back on the left side of things, but oftentimes we'll hear the media saying things about, after these things, they'll kind of spin up this paranoia about guns and guns violence and start talking about taking people's guns away or stopping this. And so then Slater wrote here that the NRA always gains membership when one of these stories happens because they can now sell based on this pitch of, like, Obama's going to take your guns, Hillary's going to take your guns, whatever. And A, that's not true. It's usually not going to happen, but they are able to kind of inspire this fear that gets them to act in a certain way.
I remember gun ownership skyrocketed after Obama's first and second his election and his re-election.
Right, exactly. And if we inspire that kind of thing, then it's just going to be solved. If we inspire that kind of fear, it's going to be solved somehow, right? Like, either there's going to be guns smuggled across the border in Mexico because there's now an economic need for that that will be supplied by somebody else. If we make gun shops illegal, if we make Arizona or these other Nevada areas, we won't allow that happen. It'll come from somewhere else because the criminals will always get guns. There will always be a way for that to come into the country if there's a demand for it. And then the secondary idea is just that, that the NRA and these other things can feed off that fear.
Gangs in the United States are not going to all of a sudden go, well, we can't own guns, so
boohoo. Yeah.
Like, what are we gonna do now?
Right.
Like it's. I think that there. It's a good thought, but it's in some ways unrealistic.
Yeah. And so the one place where I still feel a little bit conflicted, like we talked about minorities, we talked about things, and we'll probably get to this at some point, we briefly mentioned Black Lives Matter earlier, where like the only challenge I have with this argument is that if I was the parent of a black son and I was fearful for his life because, you know, his friend or his cousin or someone he knew had been shot by a police officer unjustly, I can see wanting him to be defended. I can see him wanting to be armed in a certain way. And so that is where I feel like there is a discussion that really should be more about police, but I can see how right now in today's culture, there is a desire to have that option, to be able to, you know, you pull out a gun, I pull out a gun. And like, it doesn't solve the problem, right? It causes more violence. It doesn't really fix anything.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to protect your son, like, I can see that. So that's the only place where, like, I feel like there's a much deeper discussion to have that I am not equipped to have. And that's why I think the Black Lives Matter movement continues to trigger both sides of, it's a hard question of, do we provide these people with access to violent weapons to protect themselves, because we're also sponsoring a government-run police state in certain places that is killing these children and killing these people. And so there's a lot of challenges there. And so that's the one place where I don't have a satisfying answer at all. That is, it's a difficult part of the issue. But I'd say that in general, we want to have logical, rational gun control and not inspire paranoia and fear on the left side, but have rational control.
So the point that was just raised by our studio audience, I'm just looking at the levels and I don't know if it got picked up, but Philando Castile, here's a case where the guy has a gun on him,
right?
Pulled over, and he tells the police officer, "Officer, I'm just letting you know I have a gun on me," which is what you're supposed to do. It's what they tell you you're supposed to do. If you get pulled over and you have a gun, you let the police officer know, "I'm just letting you know I have a gun on me." And the police officer asks him to get out his wallet, and he reaches for his wallet, and he says, get your hand out of there, and he shoots him, and shoots him 7 times. Have you seen the video?
Yes, I have.
And where's the NRA on that?
Right.
Here's a guy...
They're not defending his gun ownership.
Well within his rights, by the Constitution, within his rights, doing everything correctly... Not only does he get shot, but there's no consequence for the police officer. He goes free.
Right.
It was the word racism was used. I don't think we even need to... maybe we do need to go there.
I mean, all I'd say is that clearly the NRA is an organization that is less about the purity of the idea of defending yourself, of independent protection and safety... and more about this idea of keeping things as they are, using guns and using violence, effectively, to the beginning of our discussion, as a way to keep the status quo or to get back to a world that I want to live in.
So when the progressives start talking about women's rights and the advancement of science, and they start marching for these things, we can get our guns with the clenched fist of truth, mm-hmm. and we can fight this violence. Disgusting.
It's really disgusting. And to quote a very dumb quote, I might put it in here as our moment of zen on this episode. There's a beautiful song that I sent you, Dan.
Did I miss it? Did I listen to it?
You may have missed this. I'll play it for you after this. a great comedian, Bo Burnham, wrote a song about straight white males. And he says, you know, the gays want kids and the blacks want not to be called the blacks. And it's very entertaining, but he ends it with, straight white male, we still own all the land and the money, but it's not as fun now. And that often feels like what this problem is people who are already privileged, who already have life so much better than they ought, so much better than the average, effectively keeping people down using false arguments to say like, oh no, we're about gun control or we're about, you know, whatever it is. No, you're often using this, and if you have to be equal, the same way that we need to be, hold ourselves to be equal to to be constructive criticism for the left and the right, we have to do the same thing for every race, for every person. It's about the ideas of independence. It's about the constitutional document that shows we have rights to protect ourselves in certain ways and certain situations. And so if you only do that when a poor white person is shot or when everything else, we need to be consistent about that. And that's what we'd like to hold the Conservative Party to and everybody to.
So
I do actually have a conclusion here. You want me to read it?
You want to do the conclusion, or did you want to talk about the religious perspective?
That's a good point. Let me read this, and let's do our religious perspective, okay?
Okay.
I wrote, we can't uninvent automatic weapons the same way we can't forget how to make nuclear weapons. It's just something that already is out there. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Nuclear disarmament, logical sanctions, and diplomacy all work towards minimizing the risk of nuclear fallout. We've had these years of the Cold War and, you know, disarmament. Perhaps these are the same strategies that will be effective in curbing gun violence. This idea that guns exist, they're out there. How do we minimize the violence? Don't make the gun the focus, make the violence and the death and the destruction that happens to human lives. That's what we're trying to stop. We're not trying to stop people from owning guns. If people could own guns and have zero gun deaths, we would be super happy with it, I think. But it's the violence that happens where people use these guns in hatred, in anger, in, you know, these shortly not well thought out ways. So let's bring this to a faith-based perspective. There's not a lot of verses in the Bible about guns or gun control. There's definitely verses about violence. You know, do not murder. Do not attack another brother. You know, there's things like that. But what do you feel like would be the idea here, Dan? I heard you wrote a paper on this.
Yeah, I wrote a paper on this very thing, and I've surveyed pretty much all the arguments, and both sides come down to arguing over this one verse, and it's Luke 22:36.
Okay.
So Jesus is. Some context. It's the Last Supper, and they're about to... So he starts off by saying, when I sent you without purse, bag, or sandals, did you lack anything? And he says, nothing, they said. So he's getting ready to send them back out into the world. I may need to back up a little bit here. No, it's... So it's after the... he tells Peter, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. And then he turns to the rest of the disciples and he says, when I sent you without purse, back, or sandals, did you lack anything? And he's referring back to an earlier moment in Luke when he sends the disciples out to do some ministry throughout the land. And he sends them without purse, without a bag, and without sandals. And he still provided for them. And there's another command in there that is to greet people along the road.
Mm.
When I sent you out without purse, bag, or sandals, did you lack anything as you were going around and greeting people along the road? Nothing, they answered. He said, but now, if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag. If you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. So, he's preparing them for this time now where he's going away. It's like Aslan at the end of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where he's gone and they're left there on their own. And he's not going to be there to defend them. And so he's saying, take a purse, take a bag.
Right.
And now take a sword. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. And there's this connection with the greeting people on the road, because he talks about bags, swords, sandals.
Sure.
Greet people along the road. The roads are about to become dangerous. And so the argument is he telling them to take a sword to defend himself? What is he saying? And for I tell you that scripture must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with the transgressors, for what is written about me has its fulfillment. And they said, look, Lord, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is enough. So he's saying, I'm about to go be numbered with the transgressors. And so they're pointing back to scriptures about how he's about to suffer and he's about to die.
Sure.
And so this is why I'm telling you to do these things, because I'm about to go away.
Right.
And they say, look, here we have two swords. And he says, it is enough. And so the entire argument is over what he means by it is enough. Mm-hmm. Some people say he's talking about it's enough of this nonsense. Like, you guys don't get it. Like, let's move on.
Right.
Some people have said that he's saying, two swords is enough. They quibble over what is Jesus talking about there.
Right.
That is enough to fulfill the prophecy that I am counted with the transgressors, and you guys are the transgressors by having the swords. That's one of the arguments.
Sure, that's one interpretation.
They are now sinning by having these weapons.
Right.
So there's a couple issues there. The first is, what does Jesus mean by sword?
Right.
And the second is, what does he mean by when he says it is enough?
Sure.
So he uses a word there for sword. Swords are mentioned a few times in Luke.
Right.
The first time he talks about how Mary was pierced by a sword, and that's one word. And then here it's a different word.
Okay.
And then later on, when the Pharisees come with swords, it's the same word that Jesus used. So here's a metaphorical sword.
Right.
And it's different from this word over here that Jesus uses that is the same word for these literal swords at the end. So I think that he's talking about literal swords. Take literal swords. He's not being metaphorical.
Yeah.
This is getting very technical.
In the Greek, theology.
And then the argument is, okay, so when he says it is enough, it means that is enough of this nonsense.
Right.
But it's so abrupt. And the question is they're saying, like, Jesus has just gotten so fed up of his disciples not understanding what he's talking about. And throughout scriptures, the disciples aren't understanding what Jesus is saying.
Rarely, yeah.
But you never see him lose his patience where he's just like, that's enough. Like, let's just go. You don't see him lose his patience with the disciples.
Right.
The argument that this is enough for you guys to be counted among the transgressors, he just commanded them to take up swords. And it doesn't make sense that Jesus
would turn back around.
Would command them to do something knowing that it's sinful in order for him to fulfill prophecy.
Right.
I don't think he would just be present among them.
Right. So the logical conclusion is he's saying that is enough to defend yourself.
That is enough, right. So the argument is that we as Christians, this is what I argued in my paper, and to a certain extent I still hold this. I go back and forth. Still,
sure.
We as Christians, there is room for us to argue that we may take up weapons to defend ourselves. Our lives are, we are made in the image of God, and that is something worth defending ourselves or others.
Right.
And I'm going to come back to that point in a second. But there were 11 disciples now. Judas had already left at this point.
Right.
And there was only two swords among them, and he said, that's enough. And I think that what Jesus is saying is if you don't want to have a sword, you don't have to.
Mm.
Those of you who do want to take up weapons to defend yourself and others, that's fine.
Sure.
If you aren't comfortable with that, I think there's room there for that. And people will say, well, Jesus said, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And that was directed to Peter in the garden when Peter took out his sword to defend Jesus. And he said, he doesn't tell him to get rid of his sword. He says, not now. He says, put your sword away. This is not the time for you to use it. Because you're preventing, you don't use it to defend me.
Right.
Use it to defend yourself and others. Like, I'm going to lay myself down.
Right.
And so that's the argument, I think, from the biblical perspective as we are Christians. Now, we're talking about swords. We're not talking about guns. But
the concept of defending yourself.
I think that as Christian, there's also turning the other cheek.
Right, you got to hold that in contrast with the idea of love one another is the first and greatest commandment. And there's commands to, you know, take care of your family and to protect your wife and your kids. And then the mentions that you just said of, like, there are certain places where God has commanded his followers to defend themselves.
And we live in a world where there are people who are out to kill fellow image bearers.
Sure.
And I think about all of the mass shooting, and there's the line, like, a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about taking up arms in defense of others.
Mm.
We live in a fallen world,
right?
And that's cliche. But we live in a fallen world where evil exists and people want to kill other people.
Sure.
The first sin outside of Adam and Eve, the first sin of someone born into a fallen world was to murder his brother.
Right.
That's the world we live in. And I say if you want to defend yourself and others as Christians, you are allowed to do that. If you don't feel comfortable owning guns as a Christian, you don't have to follow that command. But I think that Jesus allows for us to defend our fellow image bearers. And that's... I think that's it. That's all I have to say. That was a very long... kind of technical answer, but...
No, I think it's important for us to understand where we can go from this, and I'm... sure, this will be the beginning of a longer discussion, but the idea that, there's nothing in the Bible that says, like, you have to or you don't, but, I think there's a very biblical argument for, you know, being a soldier or fighting or protecting someone else in, maybe it takes violence, but this ethical dilemma of, do I kill him to save another person? I'd say in the case of, you know, when you're protecting a fellow Christian or a fellow just innocent person, there is a very strong argument there from the Bible. And we have to hold that in contrast with this idea that we should love one another and that we should be there for all souls. Just in these moments of violence or anger that we have to be also protectors.
I can't find the passage right now, but I'm reminded of the first place that the death penalty is commanded in the Bible. It's chapter Genesis 5 or 6, somewhere in there. And it's if someone... takes the life of another person, you're to put that person to death because they have killed the image of God.
It's punishment, yeah.
It's God takes his image so seriously. The image of God in his creation, in his children, he takes that so seriously that he says, if someone kills one of my children, you are to put that person to death.
So our second hour is the death penalty.
Right, we're going to tackle that one next. No. But so that's my answer. Is the image of God is worth defending, and don't act, only act in defense.
Right.
If you're going to use a weapon against another person, only act in defense. And if everyone just only acts in defense, no one gets killed.
That's a good point. Because
no one's attacking anyone.
That's a very good point, Daniel. Well, for this week, I'm Chris.
And as always, I'm Dan.
I don't think we're right, but we'll keep asking the question.
This is definitely one of the ones where we're asking, are we right about this?
Yeah.
And we have our opinions, but we're still figuring it out.
So let us know, are we right? Have a great week.
The women want rights. The blacks want not to be called the blacks. Sorry. Can't you just leave us alone? Also know the things you asked for. No. Straight, white, mirror, I know the road looks tough ahead. The women want rights. The African American doesn't work with the rhythm. We used to have all the money and land, and we still do, but it's not as fun now.